Usually when you are running web campaigns, there is this expectation of immediate godlike visibility.
Oh, absolutely.
Like someone clicks a Google search ad, they land on your website, they look at a pair of shoes, and they check out. And the moment you publish a tracking tag on that site, the feed just goes live.
Yeah, you can literally sit there and watch the traffic flow in real time.
Exactly. But then, you transition into the world of mobile apps, and your entire intuition just completely betrays you. All those web rules you've relied on for years, they just suddenly stop working.
Yeah, it creates a false sense of security, honestly. You get used to the web environment being this open, always connected pipe where data just, flows instantly. I always tell performance marketers to think of it this way.
Okay.
Web tracking is like setting up security cameras in a brightly lit retail store. I mean, you see everything.
Right.
But moving to mobile app tracking, that is like trying to monitor a submarine deep underwater using sonar.
That is a terrifying analogy, but it makes sense.
Right. Because the environment is totally sealed off by Apple or Google, the connection is intermittent, and the signals you rely on are just constantly delayed or degraded.
So if you're listening right now, we know exactly where you are in your career. You are a seasoned web performance marketer. You can run Meta and Google web campaigns in your sleep. Your UTM parameters and your pixel configurations are flawless.
But maybe you are targeting a new role.
Yeah, exactly. Like a performance marketing specialist at a major travel tech company or a fintech platform, and they need you to master mobile app tracking. You are essentially, well, learning to read the sonar.
Which means stepping away from the browser ecosystem completely. We have to rebuild your understanding of data collection from the ground up.
And that is the mission for today's deep dive. We are translating your existing web knowledge into mobile survival skills.
Yeah, focusing heavily on the trinity of mobile campaign analytics. So that's Google Analytics 4, Google Tag Manager for apps, and Firebase.
Right, because before we can analyze user drop-off or, calculate return on ad spend, we have to lay the actual plumbing. And
Exactly.
in the mobile world, that plumbing starts with a very strict, non-negotiable relationship between Firebase and GA4.
Yeah, the foundational rule here is incredibly strict. One Firebase project connects to exactly one GA4 property.
Wait, strictly one-to-one.
Strictly one-to-one. You cannot link multiple Firebase backends to a single GA4 property, and you cannot split one Firebase project across multiple GA4 properties.
Okay, let's unpack that.
Think of it like pairing a Bluetooth speaker to your phone. You pair one device to one audio source. You can't magically fan out that Bluetooth connection to five different cars at the same time.
Right, I understand the limitation, but if the architecture is that simple, literally just a one-to-one link, why do marketing teams constantly mess up this initial integration? I mean, it sounds like a single button click.
Well, because the failure is almost never technical. It is entirely administrative.
Oh, of course, office politics.
Basically, yeah,
Yeah.
to make this link happen, your specific Google account needs high-level permissions in two completely different platforms simultaneously.
Okay.
You need to be an owner or an admin in the Firebase console, which is, usually controlled by the development team.
Right.
But simultaneously, you need the editor role or higher at the property level in GA4, which is controlled by marketing.
Let me guess. The dev team gives you like viewer access in Firebase because they don't want marketing breaking their database.
Exactly.
But you have admin access in GA4.
And when you try to link them, the system just rejects it.
It's a fails.
It fails silently. It won't throw a helpful error message. It simply refuses to connect. So you have to get IT to temporarily elevate your permissions in both systems just to establish the bridge.
Wow. Okay, let's unpack this further because once you finally get the permissions and hit link, there's another massive difference from the web, right? On a website, I paste my GA4 measurement ID into the header, refresh the page, and boom, my visit pops up in the real-time report.
Yeah, well, in mobile, you enter a waiting period.
The waiting period.
Yeah. The moment you link Firebase and GA4, no data flows immediately. You have to budget up to 24 hours before the data streams fully activate and events start populating your GA4 reports.
Wait, 24 hours? Why does it take 24 hours? Is it manually reviewed by somebody at Google? That feels like an eternity if I am trying to launch a campaign on a Friday afternoon.
No manual review. It comes down to back-end server provisioning.
Okay.
When you establish that link, Google has to provision new data pipelines and storage clusters specifically for that app's event stream.
Oh, I see.
The Google App ID is already sitting in the app's configuration files, so the developers don't have to push a code update to Apple or Google, but the cloud infrastructure just takes time to wake up and route the data properly.
Note to self. Never leave the analytics plumbing for launch day.
Never.
So let's assume the 24 hours have passed and the pipes are officially open. On a website, page views just happen natively. The browser reads the URL and the tag fires. What is the equivalent baseline data we get for free in a mobile app?
So as soon as the developers initialize the Firebase Software Developer Kit or SDK inside the app, you get a handful of events without writing any extra tracking code.
For free.
Exactly. You automatically collect first open, which is vital because that is essentially your app install metric.
Right.
You also get session start, screen view, and if they are using the native iOS or Android billing systems, you even get in a purchase automatically.
Getting the install to session baseline right out of the box is great.
Yeah.
But if I am working for a travel app, a generic screen view is practically useless for my campaigns.
Yeah, pretty much.
Because I don't just want to know someone looked at a screen. I need to know they searched for a flight from New York to London. I need specific high-intent actions like search initiated or checkout started.
And that pushes you across the divide into custom events. Every action beyond that automatic baseline requires manual instrumentation.
Meaning the devs have to code it.
Right. The developer has to write a specific log event call into the app's code. And what's fascinating here is that mobile hardware constraints actually dictate strict rules for this. You are dealing with strict limits on how much data you can send.
Hardware constraints. What do you mean? I thought this was just cloud analytics.
Well, the web assumes an infinite, always connected pipe, right?
Right.
Mobile devices rely on lithium-ion batteries and cellular data plans. Every time an app sends an analytics ping to a server, it wakes up the phone's cellular radio.
Oh, and that drains the battery.
Exactly. To prevent analytics from killing user devices, Google enforces hard ceilings. The biggest one, a mobile app, is capped at exactly 500 distinct custom event types.
Wait, hold on. 500 total distinct events for the entire lifespan of the app?
Yes.
That seems incredibly low.
Well, you can track millions of instances of those events, but you can only define 500 unique names.
Got it.
Additionally, the event name cannot exceed 40 characters, and you can only attach up to 25 custom parameters to a single event.
So for your flight search, the event is, say, search initiated, and the parameters are destination, dates, and passenger count.
Spot on. That's how you have to structure it.
Okay, but this sounds like a recipe for disaster if a company has multiple dev teams.
Oh, it is.
Like, if I have an iOS team in New York and an Android team in London, and the iOS developer codes the event as add to cart with capital letters,
Right.
but the Android developer types add to cart in all lowercase, is GA4 smart enough to just merge them?
No. And this is a massive pitfall that destroys marketing setups. GA4 is fiercely case sensitive.
Really?
It treats add to cart and add to cart as two entirely separate events. They will never merge.
So now I am eating up two precious slots out of my 500 event limit for the exact same user action.
Yep. It fragments your data, ruins your audience building, and worst of all, once you hit that 500 event ceiling, GA4 doesn't send you an email.
It doesn't tell you.
It doesn't throw a red warning banner in the interface. It just silently drops any new event names. They're just disappear into the void.
Silent data loss. That
Yeah.
is terrifying.
Which is why you have to enforce what developers call lowercase snake case, all lowercase letters, words separated by underscores.
Okay.
It must be a global, non-negotiable standard enforced during code review before the app ever gets submitted to the App Store.
Okay, so let's say we enforce snake case. My developer adds a new book initiated event to the app code. Obviously, I need to test this before we spend $1 million driving traffic to it.
Naturally.
You mentioned earlier that the mobile environment delays signals to save battery.
Yeah.
How on earth do we QA test this if the data takes forever to show up?
So normally in a live production environment, the Firebase SDK batches events locally on the user's phone. It waits, hoards the data, and then uploads it in one big chunk roughly every hour.
An hour.
Again, this is to keep the cellular radio from constantly turning on and draining the battery.
But if I am testing a new flight booking flow, I tap search, and then I just sit at my desk for an hour, waiting for GA4 to confirm the tag fired. I mean, that is completely unworkable for a QA process.
It would be, yeah, which is why we use a tool called Debug View.
Debug view.
Yeah. To use it, you take an Android test device, plug it into your computer, and run a simple command line script in your terminal. You don't even have to change the app code.
So what are you changing?
You're just telling the Android operating system to alter how that specific app behaves.
What exactly does that command tell the phone to do?
It forces the app into debug mode. It completely disables that hourly batching mechanism.
Oh, nice.
So suddenly, every time you tap a button in the app, the event is immediately pushed to the server. You open the Debug View interface in GA4, select your test phone from a drop-down menu, and you get a live timeline.
That's amazing.
Yeah, you can click on your search-initiated event the millisecond it happens and verify that the destination and date parameters are passing correctly.
But hold on. If I am running 50 test searches for fake flights, aren't I polluting our live production data? Like, I don't want the data science team panicking because they see a sudden spike in uncompleted flight searches from my desk.
Right, but the system protects against that. Any event that arrives with the debug flag attached is automatically cordoned off.
Oh, good.
It is intentionally excluded from your aggregate GA4 production reports. It won't show up in your conversion metrics, and it is excluded from your daily data exports to BigQuery.
That is a relief. So my fake testing data is basically quarantined.
Quarantined, yes. But here is the critical warning. When you are done testing, you must run another terminal command to turn debug mode off.
Why? What happens if I don't?
If you unplug that test phone, throw it in a drawer, and next week a sales rep grabs it to do live demos for clients, every single action taken on that device will still carry the debug flag.
Oh no, so all those real client demos will be filtered out. The device basically becomes a ghost in our analytics.
Exactly. The device goes totally dark in the aggregate data.
Wow, I'm seeing a pattern here. Every safety mechanism in mobile has a really dangerous edge to it.
You're not wrong.
All right, let's look at a scenario where the app is already live in the App Store. Real users are downloading it. And I realized that the developers forgot to include the hotel-id parameter when someone views a property.
A classic mistake.
Right. And on a website, this is an easy fix. I log into Google Tag Manager, intercept the data layer, build a new tag, hit publish, and it's live instantly. Is mobile GTM just as flexible?
Honestly, you need to unlearn everything you know about Tag Manager.
Really, everything.
Yeah, web GTM is like a printing press. The moment the web page loads, it manufactures and fires HTTP tracking requests out of thin air.
Right.
Mobile GTM acts more like a toll booth operator on a highway. The cars, which are the native log event calls, are already driving down the highway because they are hard-coded into the app.
Right. The devs put them there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
GTM just stops them at the toll booth, checks their parameters, and maybe modifies them before letting them pass through to GA4.
So if the app code captures a hotel-id internally but fails to send it to analytics, I can use mobile GTM to intercept that event at the toll booth, grab the ID, and attach it to the GA4 payload without forcing users to download a new app update.
Precisely. You can extend or modify existing events.
Yeah.
But the deployment reality is where marketers get burned.
How so?
When you hit publish on a web container, it's live globally. When you hit publish on a mobile GTM container, nothing happens immediately.
Wait, why not?
Because mobile containers are cached locally on the user's physical phone. An app cannot constantly ping Google servers to ask if there's a new GTM version. It would waste data.
Oh, back to the battery and data constraints.
Right. So the app only checks for an updated container roughly every 12 hours.
So if I realize my tracking is broken on Friday morning and I publish a fix at noon, most of my users won't actually run the new tracking logic until midnight. My hands are completely tied.
Unless the user manually force quits the app and restarts their phone, which, you know, you can't control. Yes, you are waiting up to 12 hours for that cache to clear.
Here's a scenario that really worries me then. Let's say my GA4 reports are cluttered with duplicate session start events because of a bug.
Okay.
I decide I want to use GTM to just block the session start event entirely until the dev team can fix it. I can just build a blocking trigger in mobile GTM. Right.
I have to stop you right there because this is the hardest limitation for web marketers to accept. You absolutely cannot block or suppress the automatically collected Firebase events using GTM.
Wait, I can't intercept them at the toll booth.
They don't go through the toll booth?
What?
Yeah. Auto-collected events like first open and session start fire directly from the deepest level of the SDK. Your mobile GTM container sits on top of the SDK. It doesn't have the authority to intercept those core signals.
So what do I do?
If you need to stop an auto-collected event, You have to beg the development team to write an actual code change, disabling the SDK's auto-initialization, compile a new build, and submit it to the App Store.
Wow. You really are at the mercy of the compiled code. The days of marketing operating completely independent of the engineering team are over.
Long over, yeah.
Okay, let's assume our tracking is finally flawless. We used Snakecase, we didn't hit our 500 limit, we tested in debug view.
A perfect setup.
We are successfully tracking users who search for a flight but drop off before paying. But raw data doesn't pay for ad spend. How do we translate that flight search into a retargeting audience we can actually monetize?
Well, GA4 allows you to build behavioral audiences based on these custom events. You create an audience condition that includes users who triggered search initiated. Then you add an exclusion group for anyone who triggered the purchase event.
The classic searched but abandoned segment.
Exactly. And because a flight booking consideration window is short, you set the membership duration to 7 days.
Makes sense.
When you save it, GA4 does something incredibly helpful. It dynamically looks backward and backfills this new audience using the past 30 days of historical data. You don't have to start from zero and wait a week to gather users.
That is fantastic. So yeah. I link GA4 to Google Ads and it exports that list. But, you know, I have seen this integration break in the wild.
Oh, I'm sure you have.
Like, I'll look at my shiny new audience in GA4, and it says I have 2,500 people who abandoned a search. I open Google Ads to launch the campaign, and it says the audience only has 900 people. Where did the other 1,600 users go? Is the integration broken?
Not at all. That divergence isn't a bug. It is a fundamental feature of the privacy era.
Really? How so?
GA4 and Google Ads are answering two entirely different questions. GA4 counts raw behavior. It counts every single device that met your criteria, regardless of privacy settings.
Because it's just measuring what happened inside the app. But Google Ads is an advertising platform.
Which means it has to respect consent. Google Ads only counts remarkable users.
Ah, marketable.
Right. Think about the app tracking transparency prompt on iOS, the ATT prompt, where it asks if you want the app to track your activity across other companies' apps and websites.
The famous Ask App Not to Track button.
Yes. If a user tapped that button, Apple strips away their device identifier. That user might be visible in GA4 for basic behavioral counts, but they are entirely invisible to Google Ads for retargeting.
So they searched for the flight. GA4 saw the search. But because they opted out of tracking, Google Ads legally cannot target them with a banner ad.
Exactly. They lack the necessary active ad cookies or identifiers. So your 2,500 raw behavioral users easily filter down to 900 legally remarkable users.
That makes total sense, even if it hurts to lose that much campaign volume.
It's the reality we live in now.
So audiences tell us who to target. But eventually, the CFO is going to ask if these ad campaigns are actually profitable. We need to assign credit for the installs. And from my understanding of the industry, this is where GA4 goes to war with third-party tracking tools.
Oh, yeah. The battle of attribution.
Yeah.
So if you want to analyze the user journey natively inside GA4, you build a funnel exploration. You can map up to 10 sequential steps, like first opened, session start, to search initiated, all the way to purchase.
Okay, pretty standard.
And you can pull in your Google Ads cost data, divide your purchase revenue by that cost, and calculate your return on ad spend directly in the dashboard.
See, that sounds suspiciously clean. If GA4 can do all of that natively, why do mobile marketers constantly talk about MMPs? Mobile measurement partners, like Apps Flyer or Branch.
Because of the most vital reality check you will face in mobile marketing, GA4 install numbers will never match your MMP install numbers.
Okay, let me set up a real-world scenario for you.
Go for it.
I have $1 million monthly budget. I am spending heavily on Google App campaigns, Meta App ads, and Apple Search ads. I have GA4 open on my left monitor and my Apps Flyer dashboard open on my right.
A classic setup.
They are reporting two completely different numbers for how many installs Meta drove yesterday. If my job is on the line, which dashboard am I using to allocate my budget?
You must use your MMP data for multi-channel budget allocation. Always.
I'm playing devil's advocate here. GA4 is Google's flagship analytics product. Are you saying Google built a tool that is bad at measuring ads?
GA4 is phenomenal at measuring Google's ads, but it operates inside a walled garden.
A walled garden.
Yeah. GA4 attributes installs by looking at Google observed signals, things like auto tagging from Google search clicks. But it is fundamentally blind to attribution signals from non-Google networks.
Meaning it can't see Facebook.
Exactly. It cannot see a user clicking an ad inside the Facebook app, or scrolling Instagram, or tapping an Apple search ad. Meta and Apple do not share that granular click data with Google Analytics.
But they share it with the MMP.
Yes. MMPs like Branch and AppsFlyer operate as independent, unbiased referees. They integrate directly with the APIs of Meta, TikTok, Apple, and Google.
Okay, so how does that work technically?
Well, when a user on an iPhone clicks a Meta ad and installs the app, Apple uses a system called SCAD Network. It's Apple's native framework that securely tells ad networks an install happened without revealing the exact identity of the user.
Right, for privacy.
Exactly. Yep. The MMP ingests those SCAD network postbacks, combines them with probabilistic modeling, and stitches together a cross-network view that Google Analytics simply doesn't have access to.
So if I rely entirely on GA4 to determine my budget, and GA4 can't see the Meta clicks,
you will systematically overcredit Google's channels and undercredit everyone else. GA4 will look at an install driven by Meta, shrug its shoulders because it didn't see the click, and either dump it into organic or falsely claim it for a prior Google touch point.
That is a dangerous blind spot for a marketer. So what is the actual utility of GA4 if I can't trust it for multi-channel acquisition?
GA4 rules the post-install world.
Oh, I see.
Once the user is physically inside your app, GA4 is the authoritative lens. You use it for those complex funnel drop-offs, retention cohorts, and building behavioral audiences. But when you are standing outside the app, deciding which ad network to hand your money to, the MMP is your guide.
This has been incredibly illuminating. We really are dealing with two different disciplines here. Let's recap the survival guide we just built for our web marketers.
Sounds good.
We started with the strict one-to-one plumbing of Firebase and GA4, which requires elevated admin permissions and takes 24 hours to wake up. We explore the harsh realities of mobile data limits, the 500 distinct custom events, the absolute necessity of snake case naming to prevent silent data loss, and the battery-saving mechanics that delay our data.
Right.
We bypass those delays using terminal commands to activate debug view, learning the hard way to always turn it off to avoid ghosting devices. We unlearned WebGTM, realizing that mobile GTM acts like a toll booth with a 12-hour cache that cannot stop core Firebase SDK events.
It's a lot to take in.
It is. And then we solve the missing audience mystery, understanding how privacy prompts legally filter our retargeting pools. And finally, the ultimate reality check: GA4 dominates in-app behavioral funnels, but the MMP is the unbiased referee you need for cross-network ad spend.
It's a massive paradigm shift. But once you internalize the hardware and privacy constraints driving these rules, you become an incredibly lethal mobile marketer.
Before we wrap up, I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over. We spent this entire deep dive establishing strict naming conventions, connecting perfect data pipelines, and trying to track the exact actions of specific users.
Yeah.
But as Apple and Android continue to close the curtains on device-level tracking, ask yourself this: are we rapidly approaching a future where we have to stop trying to count exact individuals altogether?
It's entirely possible.
Right. As privacy constraints tighten, will the industry abandon deterministic tracking entirely, forcing us to rely on probabilistic modeling? Essentially, giving up on seeing the submarine and learning to only measure the shadow it casts on the surface.
It is a defining question for the next decade of performance marketing. The transition from precise tracking to modeled shadows has already begun.
The water is only getting murkier, but as long as you know how to read the sonar, you can still navigate the depths. That's all for today's deep dive. We will catch you on the next one.